Cheater on the Rood with Lee Papa and Jeff Chrysler, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network.
Cheater and the Rood, I'm Jeff Chrysler, an author of the book Get Rich Cheating, and joining me in spirit is my co-host Lee Papa, the author of The Guide to Something or Other and the Rood Pundit Blog. He is on a well-deserved vacation. He's got to charge up his Rood batteries. He's going to punch himself nuts for a couple weeks, and today it's a lot of stuff that's going on, and who knows where we're going to go. I'm going to open up the phone line. This last time I was on the phone, worked out fairly well, so if you'd like to chat with me here on the Progressive Radio Network, pick up your telephone for the next 20-ish minutes, call 888-7448. Somebody answer the phone, what you want to talk about, and this is very important for Cheater and the Rude, have a porn star name. It doesn't have to be based on that little game where your street and your vegetable, whatever that is. But I want a porn star name before we get into serious stuff, because stuff is serious, but it's also life and it's ridiculous. Let me know the name you use when you put it in other people. So what's going on this week? Some of the things we might spin around and touch on. Since we last talked, Michelle Bachmann won the presidency, I guess. Rick Perry decided to run for president of Uten-Tooten-Nabberland. Obama had a little tour because why not stoop to the level of your opponent? The market has been spinning up and down. After a little smoothness, it's back in this crazy casino land, which is always fun. There's a bunch of backseat drivers in the Republican Party telling Obama how to drive metaphorical bus to Syria. Elizabeth Warren might be running, Tim Pawlenty dropped out. And I've got a little bit of an opinion on some issues about our economy that I shared on the Rood Pundit blog. But let us start with this week with something that's near dear to my heart, not necessarily the politics, but it's about sports, which relates to politics, to the following steps. University of Miami football team, I'm sure I just lost most of the listeners, to the word football, maybe I'll say American football, so it sounds easy. They are facing a lot of penalties, which are their trouble, because one of their boosters basically supplied hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of cars and prostitutes and favors and all sorts of other things for them. When you can, I just completely lost my train of thought. This is part of the beauty of leverage. The booster just provided a lot of stuff for the Miami football players, which is, of course, not allowed, and it's cheating. And the reason why I'm excited about it is because it is cheating. Because cheating transcends sports. Cheating leaks into politics. Cheating leaks into business. Cheating is what is in our economy and our culture to the point where it is. And I even wrote a book called Get Rich Cheated. What is amazing to me about this particular story, albeit sports, is it reflects cheating on a broader scale. And what it particularly reflects is that the people that will be punished are not the people at the top that sort of allowed it to happen, but the people that took advantage of the small things. The kids that took these payments stated wrong, but this is, you know, a difficult life that they're coming to, and so the opportunity to do these things is hard, and they're going to be punished by not being able to play their sport, what they've worked on all their life. And the coaches will be off scot-free. You know, I'm a big influencer of University of Massachusetts sports, and the basketball coach, John Calipari, he coached there. Some violations, took us to the Final Four. He left. Our team got all the Final Four victories wiped out. And he went to Kentucky. Took him to the Final Four, he left, had some violations, all those worked out. He did not go to Kentucky, he went to Memphis, then he's at Kentucky. Please don't yell at me for that. Point is, coaches, much like CEOs and bankers, they oversee a culture of cheating that provides riches, and then with further opportunities, when the shit comes down, they're not the ones that get punished. It's the people underneath. It's the sacrificial layouts, whether it's young athletes, whether it's, you know, maybe they throw a few bankers to the world, whether that's barely happened at all. Jerome Curio over in France, Roger Ronham got taken in, but he's now running into the financial crisis. The consequences for massive cheating, which have cultural impact beyond their they take place, those consequences are never shared by those with the greatest influence and those who gain the most from it. It is why these things happen because of the cost-benefit analysis. Let's take a break. I get back with another thought on this, and that is what we're going to do. We'll take some calls. We are going to be joined in a moment by my friend and your friend, Mr. Barry Weintraub. But first, let me just wrap up in some sort of bow. The point is, this Miami scandal is not just isolated to sports. It's a cultural moment. It's a cultural movement of cheating for short-term personal gain, and the effects of that are felt by a wide swath of people, whether they be homeowners or the unemployed, rather than those most responsible for it. I am going to shift gears now, and we are being joined by my friend Barry Weintraub. Barry, are you with us?
Jeff, how are you? I'm channeling Rick Perry tonight. Channeling Rick Perry.
What's good. Have you shot any Federal Reserve Chairman today?
I have not shot at any Federal Reserve Chairman. I have not been enveloped in the news today. Did that happen today?
No, but that's pretty much his plan. Didn't he say he's going to basically punch and beat up Ben Bernanke if he shows up in Texas?
Oh, I see. You mean the way he's calling him treasonous. I see. No, wait. Yeah. Today, there's a great quote. He was on the rope line somewhere. I don't know where. And the cameras were rolling. And a woman asked him what he thought of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was in New Hampshire. And the wife tells me he was in New Hampshire. And he leaned in and he said, well, you know, it's a theory. It's a theory that's out there, evolution. Let me tell you something. This country's going to hell anyhow. I want Rick Perry to be president because you and I will be back in business as political comics if that guy's in the White House.
Barry, you know Dr. Strangelove?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Like, who better to ride the nuclear bomb as it drops out of the sky than Rick Perry? I mean, isn't that the perfect...
but, you know, he's not a Slim Pickens type. And then that's for those who know. Slim was the guy who actually did write it. Now, Perry, he's like he's George Bush on steroids. And what I love about Perry is the rumors that he's gay. You know, he's never lost an election, though, and the guy is fearless.
Let's give him credit. I mean, that's going to be what people are attracted to. It's, you know, George Bush stuck to his gut, even if his gut was telling him to take everybody and jump off a cliff, and Perry's just going to go straight forward. He's not going to be denied. And for some reason, people are attracted to someone who's, you know, confident and bullheaded, even if it's in the wrong direction. And, frankly, as someone who's spent a lot of time believing in Obama, I would like a little more confidence and bullheadedness in my leader. I just don't want...
Yeah, wavering right there on the radio, are you? Wavering on your man. Look, we have a choice. Either a moderate Republican disguised as a Democrat or all-out anarchy. Those are your two choices. And, you know, my theme, Barack Obama, he sucks less than the other guys, but only by a little. I don't know, and you know, when you see a Rick Perry, you're just chewing at the bit. Although I will make a prediction. Can I make a prediction tonight?
Sure, is it prediction time? Hold on, let's do fake prediction music. Bum, 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 predict.
My prediction is, with Labor Day coming, Sarah Palin will announce she is running for president on Labor Day. Either that or she'll call a press conference just to announce that she's not. But that's she loves holidays. She dropped out of her governorship on July 4th. And, of course, Labor Day is the traditional kickoff of campaign season.
And she can make some sort of parallel to how there's no jobs because of Obama on Labor Day, ignoring the fact that she quit her job.
Exactly. How could she complain about no jobs? She had one and she left. The half-term governor. But she just can't stand not being in the spotlight. So I still feel she's going to jump in. And when she does, she will completely rob Michelle Bachmann of any oxygen, and she'll start suffocating Rick Perry and make it easier on Romney, which I think is the plan all along. She seems to like Romney.
Sure, so, because Romney's going to choose her for the VP. I mean, if she actually wants to be in politics, which is not clear to me, I think she wants to be a celebrity, VP, she's never going to get elected president. Like, if somebody somewhere hasn't told her that, you know, she acts like she doesn't know. Romney will pick her for a VP because Romney, that'll be his red meat because conservatives can't stand him.
It almost seems as if they've made that deal, but then you got to ask yourself, is he that insane? You know, why would you choose the VP that was credited with bringing down the last nominee of your party? But we'll see. They got a long way to go. You know, I'll be honest with you. If Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey ran, he'd run away with it because he's moderate enough not to scare off, you know, the progressives who are disgusted with Barack Obama. And while he's got a lot of belly, he sure shows a lot of spine.
Yeah. That was a nice...
I like that. I never did that before. Just kind of wove right in there.
That's what live radio is all about. It's knee bone connected to the spine bone.
Yeah, baby.
The thing about Christie is that you're right. He doesn't really put off people. Well, I look at him and compare him to Romney because I think Romney's strategy is to, like, just kind of sneak through the primaries and not say too much so that if he gets to the general, he can seem not too offensive to other people. But I don't. That's not going to work. I mean, these red meat eaters are going to just chew him up and spit him out.
Last year, right, Christine O'Donnell, we're in 2011. So in 2010, Christine O'Donnell won the primary in the state of Delaware, the most extreme right-wing Senate candidate out of the Northeast, maybe ever. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she was able to win as a Tea Party, you know, we're in quotes, candidate, it should be kind of the dinner bell ringing for Romney, as you say, that he's going to have to throw some red meat out there because these right-wingers, the way that electorate, the Republican electorate, is situated, one of them might actually get the nomination.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that would pretty much do them in a general election. But Romney,
but they don't seem to, again, it's early, and maybe at some point someone can communicate common sense to them, but that seems relatively unlikely. I mean, look, it's not completely unreasonable that Michelle Bachmann can get the nomination. I mean, I know you and I think that's insane, but just for the fact that we're talking about, the fact that she is the reddest of the red meat out there, she doesn't answer questions. And, yeah, I mean, Palin comes in, sucks her oxygen, and Perry's already sucking some of her oxygen. But
yeah, I was going to say, absent Perry, she would have been a little bit more of a contender. But, you know, she literally has nothing to run on. She's just a lightweight. And it's just indicative of the extreme right-wing electorate that they could look at this woman. These are the same people who are complaining that Barack Obama, a Harvard professor who had at least been in the state legislature and climbed to the Senate, he had no experience at all, but Bachmann, you know, a three-term congresswoman who never showed up for her job as a tax assessor.
Yeah, but she started, exactly, she had a four-year job as a tax assessor, 2 years of which she was on maternity leave. She started some school with federal funds that was there to religiously indoctrinate people. I think she totally knows what American people are like, avoiding work and being religious fanatics. Like, how more qualified do you need to be?
All right. Well, let me turn it around. Let's say, Jeff, let's throw some equal time. If you could pick someone to replace Barack Obama on the left, if it could be done, which you can't. Anytime an incumbent is challenged by his own party, that's pretty much the kiss of death. But if we could, we would, wouldn't we? We'd replace him if we could.
Well, here's the thing. Yes, in many ways I'd like to replace him, but you take anybody and you put them into that office, and when they're faced, you don't know how they're going to react when they're faced with the political reality. And the political reality of this country is so divisive, and there's such craziness on the other side that, you know, not that I agree with, but you can understand Obama's choices have been to just kind of say, fine, have it, take it. Like, we want a fighter in there, but is that really going to matter? You know, like, frankly, someone like Elizabeth Warren, because of my interest in, you know, consumer protection and the massively destructive policies of our economic system and the fact that these economic powers are run wild, like, I'd love to see her in there because she understands that problem. I think that's the biggest problem facing us.
She's actually starting to really get serious about exploring that Senate race, isn't she?
Yeah, I think she literally had an exploratory committee today. I think
that'd be great. That's the kind of voice you'd love to see on the Senate floor, you know. And try to—they won't be able to shut her up if she's an elected senator from the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know who I'd like to see there. It's funny. I've heard this talked about a few times, but you know that if Hillary was in there, she would have been fighting a little more. I think she was more fight ready than Obama. But again, who knows what would have happened if you'd had a fighter. Maybe a fighter would have taken us to that brink. Let's talk about like the debt crisis that just passed, the debt ceiling. And, you know, they would have said, fine, we're not going to pass the debt ceiling. I don't know what would have happened, and it's hard to judge. I do wish there was someone that used that cliched bully pulpit a little bit more pulpit.
Yeah, you go back to the debt ceiling and you forget. When he had the numbers in December before they turned over the House, he saw it was coming. He could have just had a debt ceiling vote then.
Yeah.
Why didn't he do it? You know, he
trusts.
He's not engendered a lot of confidence, and he hasn't really used his position well, and a lot of people make excuses that he knows what he's doing, and he's trying to show that he's the mature guy in the room, but, you know, every now and then, you just got to call it as you see it and stand tall. You know, a lot of people were pissed that he didn't invoke the 14th Amendment and bring on a crisis. And that's what Clinton, in a sense, did.
Yeah.
Over the budget.
Fine, let's shut down the government. I mean, look, there's a lot of times when Obama could... I love that he has faith in our system. I think it's misplaced. You look, go back to the healthcare debate. Healthcare debate should not have taken long enough to create what it created in the Tea Party. It should have been over quickly. It was 60-40 in the Senate. I mean, it was unbelievable. He should have grabbed Joe Lieberman by the sack and twisted it and said, we're getting this done. And instead, it dragged out for a year and a half, and that gave birth to this Tea Party movement. And there's so many times when he could have stepped up and kicked a little bit of ass to be Rick Perry-ish about it.
Rick Perry, let me tell you something. When I want something, I go out and get it. It's a theory. It's a theory that the sun comes up every day. That's a theory.
Yeah.
We're working with it.
You know what's kind of scary? I want to write a letter. I want to write a Dear Republicans letter to people, you know, I'll say like my parents. You know, I grew up Republican, people that are sort of Republican in the traditional sense that I think we always grew up with until the last 10 years, and say, Dear Republicans, look at what your party is. I mean, Tim Pawlenty was never going to win, but because of his personality, but his in retrospect and in comparison to everybody else, he was just too sane. I mean, he wasn't crazy enough. And the fact that like the party is hijacked by crazies is just it's hopefully on some level got to be a wake up call. I mean, I think in 2008 we all thought, oh, this is the end of the Republican Party, and now there are these kind of death gurgles of the Tea Party. And the question is, you know, are they going to be able to use their better messaging, which they have with the Fox News Network, and they're just better, you know, marching in lockstep to win this election? Or is there still going to be some realization that these are crazy suicidal people that want to take us away?
Well, I'll tell you what. As you know, and if I could shamelessly plug, from time to time, I do get to host national radio show, and I'll be doing it again on Labor Day night, Monday, September 5th, filling in for Alan Combs. And I was hosting that show a couple of months ago, and it was a slow news day, and I did my homework all day, but didn't have anything really good to talk about. And as I went on the air, somebody released this fantastic graphical depiction of the tax burden on Americans from zero income to multi-million-dollar income from 1913 to 2010. And what you saw in that was a few things, but just to keep it on the Tea Party, I understand their anger when you look at that chart, because today, not only are the richest Americans paying the lowest tax rate ever, and they'll sit there and tell you that's not true, that their payroll taxes were lower under Reagan.
Yeah.
But the answer to that, of course, Jeff, as you know, because you're the author of the cheating book, is that their capital gains rates are so low,
right,
and most of their income is capital gains, that they don't pay income tax.
Yeah, and that's where they make their real money. I mean, look, Warren Buffett's letter about tax me, whatever you think about it, pointed out that very true. You know, capital gains tax at 15%. Like, where's the work in that? And I love the argument. I used to go on I'm forgetting his name. It doesn't matter. It was a Fox thing. And people always talking about, oh, you can't raise the marginal tax rate 2%. Find me a millionaire who will turn down, you know, $990,000 because it used to be $992,000. You know, it just doesn't happen. Like, if there's money to be made, you're going to make money. And the capital gains, the fact that it's 15% on essentially clicking buttons and using maybe a little brain power and calling up some friends, some insiders, is absurd. I mean,
right,
why?
That's where most of the super rich, if I can coin a vaguely general phrase, make their money. My point was, though, when you looked at this chart that I spoke of, what you see is, in 2010 and 2011, the people who do pay the taxes in the United States of America are the people who earn between $70,000 and $250,000. And they pay a pretty heavy rate, because the guy who makes $250,000 pays the same rate as the guy who makes $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you're just not left with as much cash to spend if you're paying at a 30% or, what, I don't know what the rate is today. I think it's 33.
Yes, something like that.
But 33% of 250 versus 33% of $1 million, you're left with more disposable income the higher you go. You know, and that's where the Tea Party anger comes from, because I think a lot of those folks are the folks in that $70,000 to $100,000 to $200,000 range.
Exactly. It's not a populist movement in the sense of these are the 70,000 as the top level. These are the 25%. It's the upper middle class. That is the Tea Party.
Right. So what does Barack Obama need to do? He needs to acknowledge that, and he needs to get smart and run on a platform of tax reform that lightens the burden on the people in that segment of the income bracket and raises it on the super rich. When the super rich were paying 70% of all their income in taxes, this country was the economic engine that was building the world. It didn't kill jobs.
I say that relatively frequent on this show, the idea that the pro-business party is anti-business through the fact that they don't want taxes to build infrastructure and schools and high-speed rails and all these things that would help them make more business, that would help our entire country thrive, is just...
It's a theory, Jeff. It's a theory.
It is just...
I love my rate theory.
I love your recovery. Listen, Barry, we only have a few more minutes, so I want to cut you free and end on some sort of Chrysler-esque thing. Do you have any? You're on the radio on Monday. Anything else interesting to tell the folks?
I'll appear on the HuffPost Weird News. Be interviewing a guy tomorrow who wears a sandwich board looking for a rich wife. Needless to say, he's never found one. So you can find me on HuffPost Weird News, and on September 5th, I'll be hosting the Alan Combs Radio Show, and always sitting in with you when you need me. Good to have you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. That's Barry Weintraub, everybody. His rich guy with a signpost looking for, or his guy with a sign looking for a rich wife sounds like a metaphor for America. Speaking of America, we didn't get to a lot of things that maybe we'll get to, but that's sort of the way we work here. There's so much going on, so many things we could discuss. I do want to refer you all to two things that I wrote this week. One was, while we're on the subject about this kind of right-wing Republican drive for austerity, drive for absurdity, I wrote a piece on a satire website called thefinaledition.com, where the Republicans citing lack of regulatory burdens pledge to move America to Somalia. Basically, when you look at the leadership of the Republican Party, and by that I mean the candidates, and even the leadership, these are a bunch of people who have made their living through either government employment, government funding, government subsidies, and they are now pursuing, let's eliminate all government. Let's eliminate everything that government provides. Let's eliminate departments of education and housing and health and human services, the EPA, the FCC, the FDA, OSHA, SEC, the ATF, all these things, because they're just burdensome. They're job-killing. Rick Perry calls them job-killing. Fine. We can get rid of them. We'll be Somalia. And then everything will just be delicious. Everything will be wonderful. There'll be no out-of-control federal spending because there'll be no spending at all. There'll be no taxes. Herman Cain can put whatever sort of arsenic-based food he wants on his pizzas. There'll be desperate labor, no minimum wage, and a workforce that expands down to age four and up to age death. That's all you need. And frankly, that seems to be sometimes what they want. You know, the invisible hand of the market sometimes carries a machete. So that is, at the heart of it, I don't think that the right is evil, but this is the essence of what they're putting out there. And the final thing I want to point you out to, before I get out of here and work on getting better phone reception for next week, is a piece, The Root Pundit is away, rootpundit.blogspot.com, but I'm one of his guest bloggers. You should go check out everybody. Got some active service people there. And I wrote something about work and something about our economy and sort of what it's become and how I think we're missing the ball on the discussion about the economy, because I think the worldwide economy, the American economy, is shifting. There are no more real bricks and mortar industry as the backbone, and therefore we're not going to have workers able to have generations worth of people in the same industry at the same company. And it's got to be a place where we nurture the mobile worker, the free agent worker, at least in some large part of our economy, and that's not what's happening. That's one of the benefits of healthcare, of infrastructure reform, of the ability to move between jobs, would be to have a more flexible, more dynamic, a better workforce, which would make for a better economy and make for a better America. And unfortunately, that isn't even in the discussion. So, I've been Jeff Kreiser, the author of Get Rich Cheating, and a comedian. Joining us in spirit again was The Root Pundit, the author of The Root Pundit's Almanac and therootpundit.blogspot.com. We are here every Thursday at 8 o'clock on the Progressive Radio Network. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Kreisler, KREISLER.com, or go to the website getrichcheating.com. There's some cool shows coming up, including one with Dylan Radigan in September. You can check us out on Facebook at Cheater and the Rue. Just Google that. We got a little page there. Go send your comments and listen in, everybody. It's also on the podcasty page, so you can listen when you want to. This has been Cheater and the Rude on the Progressive Radio Network. We'll be back here next week, 8 o'clock. Thank you. Good night.